we have mental illness. So first, let me tell you that I am so proud of you. I see a lot more Facebook posts from people talking openly about their struggles, like being proud of taking medication and all of its healing effect. I mean, it's vulnerable as all hell. And I got you. I got you, people. I see you. A couple of you have even reached out. I think there's been about 5 people that have reached out and just asked questions, you know, about a family member that's struggling, asking about therapy for themselves and, you know, who I could recommend. And this makes me very, very happy. I feel like this is doing some good. You know, it's like 8:30 at night on a Thursday. I've still have work to do, but you know, I had to put this together and I feel like I need to say all of these things, but I also feel like it's definitely helping people. So here's my plug that if you feel like it's helping you, go find my Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/mentalillnesslife. And there's a donate fundraiser, right there for you. So again, like I was just saying, I am not here to provide inspirational quotes and tell you everything's going to be okay. I'm here to tell you to get off your ass and go to the doctor and don't give up on finding the right treatment. And that could just mean talking to a counselor or a therapist. If you're a young person, there are so many resources at your school, like high school, junior high. I know this from having a teenage son. He's always been able to go to his counselor at school. And there was even a, you know, child psychologist there. And I mean, if you don't take advantage of those resources, you know, it's just going to be worse off for you. So let's talk about triggers. From my therapy experience and like all the research I've done, especially to be able to talk to you about this stuff, here's what I've come up with. What it means to be triggered, of course, I'm using air quotes that you can't see. Like in recent years, the term triggered has been casually used to refer to the experience of having an emotional reaction, usually to some type of like disturbing content in the form of media or another social context, be it violence, mention of suicide, or some other like situation. But from a mental health perspective, being triggered really refers to the experience of people with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, like me. We re-experience symptoms of a traumatic event after being exposed to a trigger that is like a catalyst or a reminder. So triggers can be either internal or external. It can include like smells, sights, sounds, emotions that remind someone of like the past trauma in some way. When someone like me with PTSD experience triggers, it can lead to extremely overwhelming emotions like sadness, anxiety, panic. And the things that happens to like thing that happens to me most is flashbacks, which are really just vivid memories that kind of appear without warning. And it really fucks you up. It can cause you to lose track of where you are, like at the time, or like to relive a trauma. Triggers can also be relevant for people with other mental illness disorders, like anxiety, eating disorders, substance abuse. And triggers can honestly make a person like relapse into harmful habits. That's how like potent and strong they are. So I want to talk about some situations that might trigger you, and we can like consider how to cope if these are causing problems for you. I want to like, you know, give you guys stuff to think about that happens to you and not just hear my story. And so, as I said before, triggers can be both internal and external events. So like stress, anxiety, feeling overwhelmed, that racing heart feeling. Well, it really is your heart racing. Anger, sadness, feeling lonely, abandoned, frustrated, feeling out of control, physical pain, and like tension. Those can all be internal triggers that can lead down a dark path. And so when we talk about external events, what we mean is like going to a specific location that reminds us of a traumatic event, like an anniversary date, a violent movie, a particular smell even that's connected to a past trauma, like incense or something like that, or like, yeah, like patchouli. No. Seeing an overly thin celebrity, like in the case of anorexia, loud noises, that gets me a lot. So like war veterans hear like, you know, loud sounds, and it triggers memories of war, of course. Like a particular interaction or like an argument with someone can do it. Seeing someone else use drugs for when you have substance abuse problems. The ending of a relationship, that's a big one. You get dumped, or when the relationship ends amicably, it can be still a trigger. Being alone too much, feeling judged, money problems, definitely a trigger for me. Again, physical illness and tension, sexual harassment. I know some of you have dealt with this a lot, and it's a trigger because in your childhood, you know, something of that nature may have happened and you react way worse to sexual harassment than maybe somebody who can just brush it off. And then like being in a crowded place, that is one of my biggest ones. So they honestly don't really know how triggers are formed, but it's believed that traumatic memories are stored differently in the brain than non-traumatic memories. So past like difficult events may be interpreted as current threats, like, you know, happening right in front of you, which then causes your body to experience symptoms similar to the original trauma, sort of like the fight or flight response that we've all experienced. What they do know is that triggers can cause an emotional reaction before you realize why you're even upset. So triggers have a strong like sensory connection, like a sight or sound, taste or smell, or are connected like to a deeply ingrained habit. So you have all probably read something or heard like before a podcast or a video or something, this thing called a trigger warning. Like, oh, by the way, you may hear the word suicide. So like, beware of whatever. And I honestly, seriously, it is not helpful. So like, people who are like for it, like they think that it would be helpful. They feel like it gives the person a chance to prepare themselves for the trigger. Like they think that triggers are like worse if they come as a surprise. This could be viewed as like helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health issues to be safe. But at the same time, I feel like the idea of avoiding triggers really just serves to like maintain the symptoms of PTSD in the long term. And then, of course, the emotions that come up from the trigger need to be dealt with in therapy, especially if they interfere with your daily life. That's the whole point to this, to get better, right? So think of it this way. If we don't face our fears, we'll never get over them. So in this case, avoidance only reinforces post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. So I feel like systematic exposure to your triggers will really benefit in the long run. Instead of feeling helpless and depressed, if you face your triggers, it could have the effect of being able to view yourself as like resilient if you do this, if you do it gradually. But again, I'm not here with inspiration or empowerment or any bullshit like that. I'm here talking about treating your mental illness properly. And getting help with triggers is paramount. You are not a victim. Stop thinking that you're a victim, because like you need to become aware of the signs in your body that you're reacting to a trigger, like changes in your breathing. And by doing that, you'll come to learn how to like calm yourself down and shift your emotional state. Your ultimate goal should be to detach yourself from the trigger, recenter, and focus on your coping strategy, which you'll learn in therapy. This is not something that you can just learn. I mean, you can't just like watch a YouTube video on how to refocus your, you know, coping strategy, because it's so individual. You need somebody who is licensed, you know, and knows about this stuff and can sit, and it's just like going to the doctor for any other illness. You can't watch a YouTube video to diagnose whether you have diabetes. Like, come on, you have to go and see a therapist. I'm not saying you need to go to your doctor first. You can make an appointment with a therapist. The friend that called me this week and asked if I could give her information about where to go, you know, she doesn't have to go to her medical doctor first. She can just make an appointment at this place and see a therapist. And she was so cute because she's like, I'm a talker. I just like talking. And you know what? That is awesome. That is awesome that she knows that she's a talker and that's what she wants to do is be able to sit down with someone once a week or once a month and that it will benefit her because it is different than, you know, getting together with your girlfriends. It is a lot more strategic and, you know, that's the best word. It's just strategic and we need to be strategic when it comes to our health. And here's the thing, seriously, if you're being triggered on a regular basis and are like not able to cope with anything, you need to see your doctor and take the next steps. So you need to be formally diagnosed. Your doctor will assess your symptoms and determine, you know, the best treatment options for your particular situation. So talking about situations, I would like to tell you about my trauma and what that meant for me. And maybe this will resonate with some of you. It's extremely vulnerable for me. But I will tell you this. Remember I told you about EMDR and I did this EMDR therapy. It's called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And just look it up, Google it, EMDR. I'm going to talk about it at length in the next episode because it's no joke. It really is super intense and cool. And like the way it works, you know, you find your child self and it's just super cool. And you'll kind of hear how that will work based on the trauma that I endured. And so before EMDR, I was never able to talk about what happened to me as a kid ever. It was like I was being suffocated by it. It's the only way I can describe it. And I'd like to do a video series because I talk with my hands and I kind of show that the trauma used to feel like it was surrounding my head. And I'm using my hands right now to like, you know, it was like, I couldn't get it away from my face almost. And that's just how it felt. So when I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I was a beautiful child, just long blonde hair, beautiful child. I have pictures of, you know, that people just remark that that's how I grew up, just beautiful and tall and slender. And I mean, it was just a beautiful, sweet girl. And my mom was very jealous. We now have kind of determined that my mom had sort of detachment disorder, where she really was just unable to nurture me. She over-nurtured my brother and did not nurture me. And I didn't really have anybody else there to do that for me. So really all I had around me was she just had so much rage and she was very jealous of the attention that I got from lots of people, not just my dad. And during that time, because she found Jesus when I was like 6 or 7, 8 years old, and it became an obsession. Her religious beliefs became obsessive, and nothing I could have done was right. I mean, I was constantly being screamed at. There was some physical abuse, a lot of face slapping that I can remember, a lot of just screaming at me. That, you know, any little thing, and it was anything. I remember coming home from like seventh grade, and that was back in the late 80s. So my friends that remember that time, there were no cell phones or computers or iPads or none of it. We wrote notes to each other on paper, folded them up into like these like great little folded papers. And handed them, you know, passed them to each other in class or like in the hallway or some shit. And I kept them all in this like purse that I can see vividly. It was like blue and it didn't have a strap. It was just kind of like this thing that I held under my arm. It was so weird. And I remember coming home and she made me dump out all of the contents of this purse. And let me tell you, the physical reaction, I can remember it vividly. It still happens to me sometimes when I get like nervous about things, but I would get so nervous about what was going to happen. What was she going to yell at me about this time? What was she going to embarrass me about this time? and it would start in my gut and it would just flow up, and you could literally see the adrenaline, which I didn't know that that's what it was then. I just remember feeling like my heart was going to burst and that I was going to get found out that I'd done something wrong again. So she made me dump out all these notes, and it was just traumatizing at that age for her to open each one of them up and read about, I don't know, like whatever it was I was talking about, boys, I'm sure, and probably saying something that was not biblical and not, Jesus would not approve kind of thing, and read them each. And I just was mortified. Those are the kinds of things that would happen. I remember telling some sort of like fib. Like I told somebody that somebody famous was my cousin. Who hasn't done that as a kid? And she marched me into shop class. Remember we had shop class back then? I think it was seventh grade. Marched me in front of shop class. I think that's because those were the kids I told this lie to, and made me stand up and tell everyone that I was a liar. And oh my God, I can't even believe I had no friends. Like no one wanted to be friends with me. I was that girl that was marched into her school with her mom. Like I was that girl. It was mortifying. The other really strong memory I have that caused a lot of trauma was when like the most popular girl in school came to my house and wanted to go hang out. I think we back then hanging out was like we walked to the candy store and like, you know, got some crap there. I don't know. But I just remember it so vividly, her coming to the door, and I didn't know she was coming over. And my mom flipped out, and she could hear it and see it. Like, you are not allowed to leave this house. You did not ask permission. You know, that girl is not allowed to come to the house. And again, mortified. Never, that girl never talked to me again. And actually, I think they started making fun of me, and those weren't even the real memories. I mean, junior high is rough anyway. I have my son is in junior high right now. I mean, it's just rough for everybody. So I those memories are not what trigger me, like, because it just was being a kid. But it was this, you know, when I should have had somebody who was encouraging and loving and nurturing, what I got was mean, screaming, irrationally upset with me about things that, I mean, I was such a good kid. So over the course of until I was about 15, so what, 7 years or so, it was just constant. Eighth, ninth grade, she made me cut off all my hair, made it like a boy cut, made me play basketball, made me do a lot of things I didn't want to do. I was not allowed to watch TV. I was not allowed to have friends. I was not allowed to really do anything without her permission. And there are a lot of things that I repressed, a lot of things that happened that that I just don't remember that did come up in my EMDR therapy. And those are really cool things that happened. And again, I'm going to tell you all about that in the next episode, which is going to come out in the next couple of days. But so, like I said, it really all boiled down to that she just could not nurture me. And like, just was like physically impossible. And to this day, our relationship is fractured. It has never been whole. I look for mother relationships, and I have seriously amazing mother figures in my life right now, and have for quite a while, but I'll never be a whole person because I was never quite enough for the one person I wanted to be enough for. And still I'm not. Tell you a little story about when just little things that she would get really offended by. I got married in 2014, and my wedding invitations were the funniest wedding invitations ever. They, on one side, it said, will attend, will not attend. Will attend, but I'll bring, you know, five people. I'm not really quoting it exactly, but you get the idea. Like, it was just funny. And on the back, it said approved behavior, or I don't know if it was approved, or just behavior would be, you know, I'm going to show up drunk and get much drunker. I'm going to drop the F word during my toast. You know, I'm going to have sex with a bartender in the bathroom, whatever, you know, it was just funny. And she was so offended by it that her and my brother were so, they couldn't understand why I wouldn't just send her a different one. And it blew my mind. Like, this is my wedding. I sent on 192 invitations or something. Why would I take the time to create a different invitation to send to you because you're so uptight and offended easily? So those are the examples that, like, I'll never be enough. Just who I am, my vulgar self, which, by the way, I'm keeping this a little cleaner for those of you that don't like the fact that I say fuck a lot. But the fact that I've never been enough for her is it's a mind fuck. So that is something that I feel is the best way to describe mental illness. And here's the thing. So some people that would not have, you know, caused any problems. It just wouldn't have caused any problems. You would have grown up and, I don't know, just powered through and been like, you know, fine. But when you have physiological predispositions to mental illness, that trauma exacerbates it. Because just like war veterans, some people go off to war, they have these horribly traumatic experiences, but they come back and, you know, somehow they've been able to get a grip. And that's great. And they really truly have. They're not just faking it. So, but the same traumatic event can cause some very difficult things in other people. So for me, all that situation, you know, was kind of classic mommy issues. But it exacerbated my body's already fragile state. It created or morphed into the personality or mood disorder of bipolar and anxiety disorder and adjustment disorder. But it was the trauma of it all that did the trick. Does that make sense? So again, what I did in EMDR was, what happens is I turned all of the trauma into a memory so that it wasn't all up in, like all up in my face. Like I was telling you with my hands, I'm kind of like right next to my head, right next to my face is where I felt that trauma was. But what happens is you turn it into a memory and it's then way out there. Like it was almost happening to someone else. And I'm going to get into that detail next time. It was super intense. Like EMDR is no joke. You have to be ready for it. And I'll tell you about some of my triggers then too, because it really does have to do with the people that come into my life, not necessarily smells or, you know, tastes or anything like that. It's just the actual types of people that come into my life and that I gravitate toward. Those are my triggers. So one other thing that I want to tell you about, something that's manifested in my adult life, is called imposter syndrome. And the definition of that is a psychological phenomenon in which people are unable to internalize their accomplishments and have a persistent, often internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud. You can kind of see the connection between imposter syndrome and what happened to me as a kid. So, you know, I'm a web developer. I've been in IT since 1998. Every women's conference I've ever been to or any women in IT panel I've spoken or sat on has at some point mentioned imposter syndrome. I feel it a lot when it comes to the tech work that I've been involved with, like being the only girl in the room, so to speak. It's not technically a disorder. People with imposter syndrome, like we really remain convinced that we don't deserve the success that we have. So I'm going to leave with this. When we face difficult times, our support networks become very important. Those of you who do not have close friends or families, or those who do not live near the people who support them, you may find it increasingly difficult to cope alone. But that is when you really need to seek out professional help. I cannot stress that enough. You need to seek out professional help. And again, if you do feel like reaching out to me, that's fine. But I'm not a doctor, nor am I a therapist. I will always direct you to see your doctor or, you know, go and find, a mental health center in your area and make an appointment with a therapist. There's probably private therapists there as well. So just kind of do a little research. I'm going to try to put up some resources on my Facebook page and you can go there to see, you know, what the steps are. So I'm going to wrap up. I love you guys a lot. Again, please reach out if you need anything, but Please see your doctor if you're at the point where your emotions are taking over your life. Please take care of yourselves and each other.